We'll begin at the bottom of Kufchaf Zion Omid Beis. And the Gemara is talking about what you're allowed to clear out from a storage area on Shabbos. And one of the things that's mentioned is called Haturmas Hayavesh. These are certain kinds of beans, and they're dried beans, and you're allowed to clear them out in order to feed the goats. The goats eat the dried beans. They don't eat the wet beans, as the Gemara says. Dafka yovesh avalach lo. They don't eat these beans when they're still moist and fresh. And the Gemara asks my timer, what do the goats have against these fresh beans? Kevan de morir. When they're moist, they're very bitter, lo achla. Even the goats will not eat it. And if these beans are not roi lachilas behema, they're certainly not fit for human consumption, then they become mukta. So although we're very much in favor of clearing out an otzer when necessary for archim or for talmidim to sit at the drosha, but not to violate the isur mukta. Then the Mishnah goes on to say, avolo, meaning we're not allowed to be mefana, es hatevel. So the Gemara says, pshita. There's no question that tevel, which hasn't yet been subject to hafrashas, trumas, and maisers, is mukta. Anything that's not edible, because halachically you're not allowed to eat it, is mukta. So of course you're not allowed to clear it out of the otzer. Lo tzricha betevel tovel midrabanan. The Gemara is going to offer a scenario in which on a Doraisa level it's not Tevel, there's no Chiyuv Trumas and Maestros that would generate Tevel, but Min Rabbanon, it's Tevel. And in such a case, I would think that maybe for the benefit of the Archim, etc., we'd be allowed to remove this Tevel that's only Min Rabbanon. What is Tevel Durabbanon? Shezra'o bi'atzit she'eno nakuf. So there are two types of flower pots in which they would put soil and then grow things. There was a perforated flower pot, which is called nakuv, and that actually is chayav in Trumas and Maestros because it takes the nutrients directly from the ground. But then there's something called an otzitz she'eno nakuv, so at the bottom part of the flower pot is totally closed and flat, and only on a Derabbanan level do they obligate us in Trumas and Maestros. So if we ask ourselves what's the status of Tevel if he didn't take off Trumas and Maestros, in the case of an Otzit Shein and Nokuv, the answer is it's Midrabbanan Tevel. And the Mishnah wants to teach us that the Isur Mukta applies even in a case of something that's only Asur Midrabbanan. The Rashba adds another point here, that for Ketanim, you're allowed to feed them this kind of a Tevel Derabbanan. So we might think that that itself should remove the Isur Mukta. And the Rashba goes into an explanation as to why that's not so. And then the Mishnah tells us, V'lo Maaser Rishon Shelo Nitla Trumaso. If you have Maaser, which was given to the Levi before the Yisrael took off Truma, so the Yisrael, when he has possession of a field, the first thing he has to do after the harvest is to give the truma to the Kohen, the Kohen's due. Instead, he set aside 10% for the Levi without taking off truma. So the Gemara says, Pshita. The Mishnah didn't have to tell me that this is mukta and you're not allowed to clear it out of your otzar, because the Levi is not allowed to eat this maser without hafroshas truma, so that the iser tevel was chal immediately before the hafroshas maser. So when the Levi received his maser, he received maser that's tevel. Lo tzricha shekdimo bekri. That we're talking about a case where the balasadeh already did what's called winnowing. In Hebrew, that's called meruach. So after the Baal HaBayis reaped his harvest, he took the kernels and he threw them up into the air. The air, the wind, blows away the chaff. And at that point, what happens is you have those kernels that are edible, and he packs them together in what's called a kri. And at this point, he's chayav in trumos u'maisros. And then, notal mimenu maser velo nitla mimenu truma gedola. He took off maser, a tenth, without taking off truma gedola. And he gave that maser over to the Levi. So the Levi is now holding on to maser, and the truma was not removed from the maser. And our Mishnah teaches us that therefore the maser in the hands of the Levi is muktzah. And he's not allowed to eat it until first he's mafrish a truma gedola, because the Kohen already, so to speak, owns his worth of truma gedola that's inherent in the peros of the Levi. Because from the time that it reached the stage of kri in the hands of the Baal HaBayis, before it reached the hands of the Levi, it was already Mamon Kohen. In other words, it already belonged to the Kohanim. And Mao de Sema, I would have thought, Kida Omale Rav Popola Baye, in yesterday's daf, Rav Pop had an argument with Abaye, and he wanted to say that in a case where the Baal HaBayis did not fulfill his obligation of Truma to the Kohen, and instead he gave Masa to the Levi, the Levi himself is Potur from Truma Gedola. And the Masa in the hands of the Levi is Mutter, and he's allowed to eat it without being Mafresh Truma Gedola. Again, he has to be Mafresh what's called Truma's Masa. The Levi has to give Truma to the Kohen from his Masa, but he doesn't pick up the obligation of the Baal HaBayis for an additional Chiv Truma. Kamash Malon, that's what the Mishnah wants to teach us. Kiddushani le Abaye, as Abaye answered up the argument of Rav Papa, and he convinced Rav Papa that he's right, and that is that the Levi is chayv to give the Kohen Truma Gedola. In addition to, again, the Truma's Masa that he's obligated, he has to give the Truma Gedola, which the Baal HaBayis became obligated at the point that it became Tevel, which means the point after Kri, when it was in Kri. Therefore, the Levi is enjoined from eating his maser until such time as he gives Truma to the Kohen. And therefore, it's Muktzah. Now, you might ask, well, why is it Muktzah? Maybe on Shabbos itself, the Levi will be Mafresh Truma Gedola. But the answer is, on Shabbos, we're not allowed to be Mafresh Truma. Hafrasha is a violation of an Issa Drabbanon, and therefore there's no possibility of his being matir this tevel in the case of Maser Rishon Shelo Nitla Trumoso. The Mishnah continues and says, V'lo Maser Sheni V'hegdi Shelo Niftu. You have an Issa Muktza to be Mefana from the Otsar Maser Sheni that is outside of Yerushalayim, and there was never a Pidgeon or a Hegdesh before Pidgeon. Pshita, once again, we don't know why the Mishnah needs to tell me this. After all, there's no permissibility to eat Maser Sheni outside of Yerushalayim without a pidgeon, or Hegdish without a pidgeon. So clearly it should be also be Din Muktza Lo Tzricha. The Mishnah wants to be Mechadish to me, Din Niftu, that it was a pidgeon, but it was not the perfect pidgeon. It was a halfway pidgeon. Now, what is a halfway pigeon? Either it's black or it's white. The lo niftu kil chasan. The pigeon was not done in the way the Torah prescribes it. For example, in the case of Maser Sheni, the Torah says, v'tzarta ha-kesef bi'odecha, that when the Torah in Parshas Re'eh teaches us about pigeon Maser Sheni, it stipulates that it's got to be kesef, that the medium of redemption to redeem the peros of Maser Sheni is onto coins, currency. And here, what did he do? It's Maser Sheni, Shepidol al Gabi Asimon. Now, what happens is when in the process of minting coins, the government will take something called an asimon, which is a round, flat, small piece of metal that has nothing on it, and then they'll mint the coin, right? They'll impress the picture of the queen onto the coin, and then it becomes what we call legal tender. It has the status of kesef. And again, every country is a little bit different. Derachmona Omer, the Torah says, and I'll read the whole pasuk. It says, "V'nasata ba'kesef itzarta kesef biyodecha v'alachta el amokam asher yivcha Hashem Elokecha bo." And the pasuk says, "V'tzarta," and the word "v'tzarta" is an adjective describing kesef. What makes kesef into kesef? It's got to be v'tzarta. Tzarta is the process of minting. Dover sheyesh bo tzura. It has a tzura. It has a picture on it. It has the picture of the queen on it or the king. And therefore, Maiser Sheni, when you do what's called chilul or pigeon, if you do it on an asimon before it's legal tender, and there hasn't been an impression of the tzura of the mintage, then that's not considered a perfect kind of chilul Maiser Sheni. And you might think that maybe asimon would be sufficient. And as a fallback position, perhaps we could rely on this pigeon. And Kamash Balon, the Mishnah says no, that this pigeon is not enough to remove the Isur Mukta, because the pigeon has to require a Dover Sheyesh Bo Tzura, and an Asimon does not have a Tzura V'Hegdesh. What would be a halfway measure of pigeon Hegdesh? Shelo Kil Choso, Shechilo Al Gabi Karka. In the parasha of pigeon Hegdesh, the Torah says that you have to be poda hegdesh onto anything that is detached from the ground, for example, coins, currency, or other objects of value. Drachmona Omar v'nasan hakesef v'komlo, and v'komlo means something that you can lift up, so to speak, as opposed to karka, which is real estate and cannot be lifted up. So the Mishnah wants to tell us that this kind of a pigeon, a chilul of Hegdesh onto Karka, is invalid. The Hegdesh therefore remains in its status of Isur Hegdesh and its Muktzah. The Mishnah continues and says, Velo es haluf, another type of bean. And we're talking about a raw bean, and it's not even fit for animal consumption. However, Rav Shimon Gamliel allows you to move luf on Shabbos. Why? Because there is one bird up there in the sky that eats luf, and that's the raven. Now, who owns a raven? Well, it's interesting. In the sociology back then, I can't tell you today, the rich people used to have ravens. It was apparently a pastime for the wealthy. And therefore, Rav Shimon Gamliel says that since the wealthy people would use luf to feed their ravens, their orvim, therefore it's considered fit for animal consumption, and it's not mukta. Tana Rabbana, we learned in a brisa. This brisa addresses the question of what are you allowed to be metaltal on Shabbos if it's animal consumption. Metaltal in is a chatzav. Chatzav is also a kind of a grass. Let's just see if the I just want to see if there's an English translation for chatzav. Luf. Luf, he translates as luf. Okay, that does me a lot of good. And chatzav, he translates as chatzav. Well, that's also very exciting. He says it's a grass whose roots grow straight straight down and do not spread to the sides. Okay, so that's good. So now, next time you see chatzav, you'll certainly identify it. And he says, mipnei shuhumachol litzvim. Litzvim. In other words, why is it that chatzav, this kind of grass, is not mukta? You're allowed to clear it out on Shabbos. And the answer is because that's food for the deer. They eat chatzav. And therefore, in his mind, he thinks, you know, maybe as he goes into Shabbos, maybe he'll feed his deer. And esachardol, so we're talking about mustard in its natural state before he crushes it, neshu machal yonah, because the doves eat chardal. So he would, on Erev Shabbos, think about possibly feeding the doves. Rav Shimon Gamliel Omer, af metaltelin shivrei zchuchis. Could you imagine, what would you do with small pieces of broken glass? Which animal on the face of the earth would eat glass? And the answer is, mifneshu machel lineimios. We're talking about an ostrich. And I guess an ostrich will eat just about anything. Let me just see if he adds anything here. He said glass shards is food for ostriches. Okay, that's good. Yep. I remember Curious George once was feeding an ostrich and his bugle went into the mouth of the ostrich. Okay, I don't know if you read Curious George. Anyway. Okay, he says here in the footnote that the Ran claims that ostriches were also raised by very wealthy people. And therefore, according to Rav Shimon Gamliel, once the princes would raise ostriches, and these little shards of glass can be used as food for them, therefore they're not mukta. Amalei Rav Nosson, so Rav Nosson, one of the Tanoim, turns to Rav Shimon Gamliel with the following objection. He says, Elamiata, according to you, chavile zmoros yitaltalu. Now, when we have branches of trees or vines, that's mukta machmas gufo. That's real makoi mukta, because if anything, you'll use it for firewood to fuel, and that's mukta. We don't burn fuel on Shabbos, obviously. But the answer is, says Rav Nosson to Rav Shimon Gamliel, mipneshu machal lepilim. Right, so you go out to Thailand and you buy yourself an elephant because you're very rich. And elephants love to eat vines. So it shouldn't be mukta. So the Gemara now makes a distinction between ostriches and elephants. Rav Shimon Gamliel would say the following, that ostriches is shchichi. There are quite a few rich people around who raise ostriches, and therefore the shards of the glass are not mukta. But pilim lo shchichi. Even the richest of the rich don't usually grow elephants. If he had an elephant, as we'll soon see, that might be a little different. You know, raise your own elephant. You know, you're in South Africa, so you raise your own elephant. Omar Amemar, for who, in other words, that which Rav Shimon Gamliel allowed moving on Shabbos, small shards of glass, the Isle Namios. According to Amemar, we severely restrict this heter of Shimon Gamliel, and it only applies to a rich person who has in his backyard his ostrich, and he's feeding the ostrich. Therefore, it's not mukta. Omer Rav Ashi l'Amemar, and Rav Ashi objects to Rav Meimar. El, according to your logic, de ka'omar le Rabbi Nosson l'Rav Shimon Gamliel. I don't understand the objection of Rav Nosson. He said to him, to Rav Shimon Gamliel, chavileis moros yitaltim neshu machal apilim. That now we should allow moving vines and wood on Shabbos because it's food for elephants. And e islay pilim, if the way you interpret Rav Shimon Gamliel Amemar is that he has his backyard, he has maybe he's raising an elephant for training it for a circus, I don't know, is amai lo? So what's Rav Nosson's objection to Rav Shimon Gamliel? There should be no reason why it's mukta. I mean, I'm raising my own local elephant, and certainly I know that these vines will be very good breakfast food for my elephant. So what was Rabbi Nosson's question? Therefore, Rav Ashi says, Ella, I must conclude that roi, that what Rav Shimon Gamliel said was that since if lu yitzur, I had an elephant, the elephant would find a very nice, enjoyable meal with these vines, with these chavilis moros, therefore it's not mukta. Hachinami here too, when Rav Shimon Gamliel says you're allowed to move shards of glass because it's food for ostriches, he didn't mean that he has his old white ostrich. But roi, that's the key word, is roi, that if he had an ostrich, and that's enough from Rav Shimon Gamliel's perspective. And what is the yesod of Rav Shimon Gamliel, if we could formulate his underlying halachic principle, and that is called Kol Yisrael B'nei Malachim Hei. And let's just read it inside in the Gemara. Omer Abai, Rav Shimon Gamliel, and a number of other Tanoim, including Rav Shimon, Rav Yishmael, and Rabbi Akiva, we have a list of four different Tanoim, Kulu Svirle, they all agree, again, each one in their own case. It doesn't mean they all accepted the other cases of their other colleagues, but in each case, they came up with the principle called Kol Yisrael B'nei Malachim Heim, which means that anything that's fit and appropriate for a very rich person like the prince is considered appropriate and fit for any Jew. Any Jew is like a prince. Now, how did Abai know to list four Tanoim who accepted this principle? Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, the first on the list, Hadam Moran. That's the one that we just learned about. That if you have something that you could feed to a raven or to an ostrich that are usually raised by the rich, then it's not muktzah. Of course, Kol Yisrael, even if you're not rich, you're considered a prince. Rabbi Shimon, where do we find that Rabbi Shimon accepts this principle? And that's a mission that we learned earlier here in Shabbos. In the case of someone who has certain pains and that he's suffering from on the side of his body, so he's allowed to use what's called rose oil. Rose oil was a kind of therapeutic method which was very expensive. Only the rich could afford it. And when you anoint your body with rose oil on those sides, then it's really great for your body. And we're going to allow it because B'nai Malachim, Sochim, Al Gavi Makoseim, Shemen Veret. And it means to say that, again, we have to go into details here about Refuah. That was a long, complicated sugya that we learned way back. And if, let's say, a person who is healthy would enjoy using this kind of a very expensive shemen, rose shemen, that has a beautiful fragrance and so forth on his body, then even if he's a chol, and if he's using it for therapeutic purposes, since it's not nikar, nobody knows, the onlooker thinks that he would have done this even if he didn't have a makkah, then you're allowed to use it for anointment for your makkah on Shabbos. And this is the opinion of Rabbi Shimon, shekein darkan shel b'nei malachim lasuch b'chol, because the princes who have a lot of money in the bank, they will use this rose oil on a weekday, and therefore it's not nikar, it's not clear that he's doing it for a fuah, even though that is his purpose, and it's mutter. And this is based on the fact that Rabbi Shimon Omer Kol Yisrael B'nei Malachim Hem. Rabbi Shmuel, Rabbi Akiva, they had a joint opinion, Tisanya and Abraisa, with regard to a balchov. Imagine you're living up the rich life, and you owe money. So you own a very fancy yacht. You own the most expensive automobile, and you refuse to pay your loans, claiming poverty. So the Braisa quotes the first opinion, and the first opinion says, "Haresha you noshimbo elef mona." The creditors were claiming that he owes an awesome sum of money. Vahu lavush itzthala. And he's wearing the most beautiful talis, the most beautiful garment, which is only worn by the princes. You know, you can't even buy it in Rodeo Drive. And it's bas mea mona. And it's worth tens of thousands of zuz. So the Tanakama of this price says, mafshitin oso. We take it off his back, and we sell it. And with that money, we pay up his creditors. Umalbishim oso itzla ruyolo. And at his financial level, we'll take some of the money that's left from this sale, and we'll buy him, shlepetika clothing. However, Tana Mishum Rabbi Yishmael and Tana Mishum Rabbi Akiva, there are two Tanoim who disagree. Kol Yisrael Ru'uyim Le'osa Itzla. Every Jew, it's fit for him to wear royal garments that are worth mea mona. And therefore, we're not going to strip him of those garments in order to pay his chov. Because if that's what he wears, then he's a prince, even though he's a regular rack and file Jew. Chavile kash v'chavile eitzim v'chavile zrodim. Okay, these are all sorts of bundles of different kinds of woods. And the animals eat it, so he designated it as animal food on Erev Shabbos. And therefore, you're allowed to clear it out of the otzer. It's not mukta because it's been designated, although it's etzim, as animal fodder. If, on the other hand, he did not designate it as animal fodder, then etzim in general, we assume, are fuel for a fire, and that means they're mukta. Tana Rabbanan, we learned in the Braisa, chavile kash, v'chavile etzim, v'chavile zrodim. Again, these are all sorts of different types of bundles of of twigs, tender reeds, of stubbles, and so forth, different kinds of wood. And im hiskinon, if on Erev Shabbos he designated them l'maichel behema as food for the animal mitaltan oson, then it's not mukta. Im lav, if he didn't do so, ain mitaltan oson, it's mukta. And the reason for that is because it is omed la soka. It is designated in a default situation. It's designated as fuel. That makes it mukta. Rav Shimon Gamliel omer no. Rav Shimon Gamliel says that even if he designated it as food for the animal, it's still aser b'tilta. You're not let him move it. Why? Chavilin anitolin biyad echad mutal taltalon. If they're very small and these bundles can be lifted with one hand, then I agree with you that it's a het to tiltal because he designated it for animal fodder. But b'shtei adayim, if on the other hand these chavilis zmora and the zradim and so forth, so they're very heavy kash, masses amounts of straw, stubble, and branches and twigs, such that he would have to lift it with two hands, usul etaltalon, and that's because of what's called tircha yisera. It's an unjustified exertion of energy, which is prohibited on Shabbos. And some want to say that perhaps what the Gemara has in mind here is mukta, but Rashi interprets, as we said, it's an issue of tircha. Then we get to chavilei se'a. These are bundles of se'a, of ezov and koronis. And again, we're talking about different types of plants that grow, legumes and so forth, that are good for animal fodder. Hichnisan li'etzim, if on Erev Shabbos he tied them up and he dried them in order to use them as firewood, ein mistapik mahem b'Shabbos. He's not allowed to use them for Shabbos even to feed his animal. L'maichel behema, if on Erev Shabbos he designated them as animal fodder, then mistapik mahem b'Shabbos, he's allowed to use them on Shabbos. Okay, now, if somebody is really, really desperate and he has no food to eat, then these kinds of legumes could, again, if you're really, really desperate, could be used for human consumption. However, in order for them to be consumed, these legumes, you have to crush them into smaller pieces. And crushing on Shabbos is an iser tochen. So we're going to have to allow you with the following condition that you do it what's called bishinui, with an unusual way. And there's machlokas here between two tanoim as to how exactly you do the shinui. The first opinion is the Tanakama. And the Tanakama here is Rabbi Yehud, actually, is kotem biyad viochel. He uses his hand instead of a utensil to break them down into small pieces in order to eat them. Ubilvad shelo yiktom bekli, but he cannot do it the normal way because that's too similar to meleches tochen by using a utensil. Umolel viochel, he can take these different legumes that have pods and he can rub them one from the other and then eat the seeds. Ubilvad shelo yimlo bekli harbe. He should not take a massive amount of these seeds and prepare them with a kli and crush them with a kli. Divrei Rabbi Yehuda, that's the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda. Chachamim omrim, Chachamim require a more radical change, a greater shinui. Molel b'roshe etzba'osa v'ochel. He has to take these pods, and not only does he remove any sort of chaff or crush them with his hands, he's got to do it with the tips of his fingers. That's called roshe etzba'osa. And then he's allowed to eat the seeds. Ubilvad shelo yimlol biyodo harbe. And again, the same stipulation, it cannot be masses of amounts, it's only a small amount. So he takes in his hand, he rubs it with the tips of his fingers, then he pops the seeds into his mouth, because if he would take it with a kli, or with his hand, and crush it, or if it would be masses of volumes, that would be kederach shu osa b'chol, and therefore it's not a shinui. V'chein be'am misa. The same halacha applies in the case of amisa. We'll see, the Gemara is going to ask what amisa is. V'chein b'pigam. Okay, we'll see what that is. In English, it's called rue, R-U-E. V'chein b'shar mini tavlin. And the same halacha applies to other types of spices. So whenever you want to prepare them for eating, you have to do it with a shinui, according to either Rabbi Yehuda shinui or the Chachamim shinui. Maya misa, what exactly is misa? Ninya. Right? And that's called mint. And sia, what is sia? Omar Rabbi Yehuda tsasrei. Okay, what is tsasrei? So here in the English translation, he says it's a word that you can identify in Old French, and it's a kind of a mint, another kind of mint called pennyroyal. And then we get to azov. And what's azov? Abarsa, hyssop. It's again a small shrub. Koronis, what's koronis? Koronis sisa shma. So in Aramaic it's called koronisa, and we don't have another name for it. V'ha hahu di amrlahu, man boy koronisa. So there was some merchant who was out in the marketplace, and he says, who wants to buy koronisa? Vishtaka chashe. And instead, what was he offering? He was offering a chashe. Okay, what's chashe? Chashi, Rashi says, is also some sort of something very similar to this mint. But I guess it has a different name, so even though we can't identify it, but it's a little bit different. Ella, therefore the Gemara has to backtrack based on this merchant and say, Sia is tsasrei. That sia is tsasre. Azov abarta. Azov, we said, was hyssop. And koronisa chashe. And that's what we have. Itmar. What's the status of raw meat? Is it mukta or not? Okay, this is a very common question. So the Gemara has two types of raw uncooked meat. One is called basar moliach, which means that it's very heavily salted. And apparently, as a result of the heavy salting, it could be theoretically edible. That's the Gemara's assumption. In fish, it's different, but in meat, that's the Gemara's assumption. Then there's something called basar tofel. That's raw meat that's unsalted, and that's not fit for human consumption. And therefore, we understand, if I could skip a little bit to Rav Chisda, Omar osu l'taltalo. You know, you're not allowed to move something that's not fit for human consumption. So if it's basar moliach, if it's heavily salted, then it's not mukta. But if it's raw, unsalted meat, then Rav Chisda argues that it's osu l'taltalo. But we skipped Rav Huna. Rav Huna amar mutu l'taltalo. Rav Huna says that maybe, you know, you could take this raw meat and maybe feed it to an animal. And non-salted meat that's raw, according to Rav Huna, is not mukta. Okay, it's not mukta. So the Gemara says, Rav Huna amar mutal taltova, Rav Huna talmid rav hava. Now, here the Gemara is going to introduce the machlokas between Rav Yehuda and Rav Shimon about mukta. Rav Yehuda says that unless you designate something, then it's not mukhan, it's mukta. So the fallback position, according to Rav Yehuda, is mukta. Unless we know otherwise, it's mukta. But Rav Shimon says no. Anything that could possibly, under any circumstance, be fit for use is not mukta. It's mukhan me'elav. It's automatically mukhan. So the Gemara wants to know the following. Rav, the Amora Rav, who's the Rebbe Rav Huna, ki Rav Yehuda svirle. He accepted the shita of Rav Yehuda, the Islay Mukta, who says that anything, if it hasn't been prepared specifically, then we assume it's Mukta. Now, unsalted raw meat has not been designated for use, and therefore, how could Rav Huna, as a Talmud of Rav, and Rav Pasim's like Rav Yehuda, who accepts Mukta, how could Rav Huna allow Tiltul? So Gemara answers, B'mukta l'achila savralak Rav Yehuda. Rav accepted a compromise with regard to eating something, so he holds like Rav Yehuda. which means that he accepts the principle of muktzah with regard to achila. And the Torah is more machmir, is more strict with regard to eating something that's muktzah, because the Torah says, ve'ichinu es asher yaviu, that anything you want to eat, you should prepare. And therefore, Rabbi Yehuda's view was accepted by Rav, that we're not allowed to eat something that wasn't prepared, and clearly unsalted raw meat has not been prepared. However, b'muktzah l'taltel, when we get to tiltal muktzah, the fact that you're not allowed to move muktzah, that's already a rabbinic institution. And we could be more makil in a rabbinic institution as far as moving muktzah, and that's called savralak Reb Shimon. And Reb Shimon doesn't accept muktzah. So even though under normal circumstances, what would you do with unsalted raw meat? But since it is theoretically possible that you might want to use it, and maybe feed it to an animal, I don't know. Or maybe in certain cases you might be able to salt it, I don't know. You have to know about salting on Shabbos. Therefore, it's not muktzah. And in tiltal, which is only rabbinic, we're going to be mekil and we're going to accept the shita of Shimon. So here's the paradox. You could have something that you're not allowed to eat on Shabbos, midin muktzah, but you're allowed to move it. Just think about that. Rav Chisda Amar also l'taltal. Rav Chisda says you didn't prepare it, and therefore it's muktzah, and it's also a tiltal. He doesn't differentiate, he doesn't have any kulas as far as tiltal. So the Gemara asks, v'ha Rav Yitzchak Bar Ami Ikla Lebe Rav Chisda. So Rav Yitzchak visited Rav Chisda on Shabbos. V'chazan, he saw him, Hahu Bar Avza. He had a duck. He had slaughtered a duck. And it was unsalted and uncooked. Davi Kamitaltale Mishamsha Latua. And his Mishamshim, that means his servants, were carrying it around from the sun into the shade. V'yomer Rav Chisda, and apparently what Rav Yitzchak saw in the house of Rav Chisda was that this was standard practice. They were allowed to move these ducks, you know, slaughtered ducks that were unsalted and uncooked. So the Gemara says that Rav Chisda turns to them, and he sees the meat lying in the sun, and he says, "Chisaron kizka chazinan hacha. I'm going to take a tremendous financial loss unless you take the meat and you move it indoors into the shade." But in any event, you see clearly that Rav Chisda allowed you to move unsalted meat. And how do we reconcile that with the fact that Rav Chisda had said that it's also l'taltalo? Shiny bar avza de chazi l'umtza. The raw meat of duck is unique, it's very soft, and it can be eaten raw. Okay, I don't know, you know, how desperate you have to be to eat raw duck. Hopefully it's Empire Duck. It has the OU. Anyway, Tana Rabbana, dog maliach, salted fish, muta l'talta, but dog tafel, with regard to fish that has not been salted, and it's raw, uncooked, and unsalted fish, also l'taltal. And it doesn't seem like anyone disagrees about fish. I don't know, you have to ask today, they eat sushi, I don't know. But the Gemara says that unsalted fish, I guess sushi is salted, unsalted fish is not fit for human consumption, it's muktzah. But basar, with regard to raw meat, according to one opinion here, it's bein tofel, bein maliach, mutal etaltalo. Whether it's salted or even if it's unsalted, stomach Rav Yishimon, we're going to accept the shita in this price of Rav Shimon, and therefore it's not mukta. Tonar Rabbanan metaltalin es hatzomos. You know, very often you eat at a table and you got bones on the table. So what do you do with the bones? Is it mukta? Bones are usually mukta, but here, mitneshu machel aklovim. So if you have dogs, then you feed the dogs the bones. Okay, I mean, in my family, we eat bones. We come from Poland, you know. In Poland, they ate bones. Yeah. Anyway, basa tafuach, he has spoiled meat, and apparently it's unsalted, and it's kind of spoiling. is you're allowed to be metaltal neshu machal lechaya. Okay, there's certain undomesticated beasts, big, large beasts, and they'll eat this meat. Maya magulim. Now, if you leave water overnight, then we're always afraid that maybe a snake put its venom inside the water, and we have to throw that out. However, you're allowed to be metaltal on Shabbos neshem reuim lechasul. Apparently, the cats are not impressed by dangerous snake venom. It's dangerous for us, but not for the cats. Rav Shimon Gamliel Omer, kol atzmon osur lashoson. He says, no, you're not allowed to leave them around. Just get rid of them. Forget about the cats. You know, it's very nice that you want to feed this water to cats, but we're not going to allow you to do so. We're going to force you to throw it out, lest a human being might inadvertently drink this water. And it's very dangerous. And therefore, says Rav Shimon Gamliel, no doubt that this is mukta, because anything that you have to get rid of is mukta. Now we have the Mishnah on the top of Daf, Kuf Chaf Ches Amid Beis. Kofin es asal milifnei haefrochim. So you're allowed to turn over a basket so that the chicks could go from the coop, jump onto the basket to get down to the ground. Kadesh yalu v'yerud, they'll go up and down. So it's like a ladder for the chicks inside the coop. And the Gemara is going to have a major problem with this, because we have a principle called ein kli nital el davar nital. And birds, like other animals, are mukta. So how are you allowed to move something for the sake of mukta? That's going to be the sugya. Tarnagola shebarcha. He's got a female chicken, and it ran away, escaped. And now there's an issue, a multifaceted issue, about whether or not you're allowed to sort of recapture this hen to make sure that it goes back into its place. And the Mishnah allows it, but under very strict, limited conditions. And that is dochenosa. He's allowed to push it from behind, ashetikones, until it goes back into the coop. And it could be that the Mishnah is telling you that this is not called mukta. That's not a normal way of moving something, which is mukta. The hen is mukta, but he's pushing it from the back. Another way in which you can get animals to move and make sure that they move is through what's called midadadin. Midadadin means when you hold on to the animal on its side, on two sides, and the animal sort of limps, you know, waddles back and forth from one side to the other. Agolim, we're talking about calves. Usyachim are young donkeys. And you're allowed to do this in order to have them walk. And you and I might think, once again, this might be a problem of mukta, it might be a problem of Tircha, but all this has to do with what's called Tsar Balei Chaim, to alleviate an animal of its suffering. And we'll see this in the Gemara Mirtzah Shem. Now, what about a mother whose child, she's trying to help the child walk, is again Midadada Es Bina. She's allowed to hold the child on two sides as the child sort of limps back and forth. And in the case of animals, or birds especially, we're going to see the Gemara is going to ask, well, what happens when you move the animal through this medadadim and the animal lifts up its feet off the ground? And then it means you're carrying the animal, which would be an iser mukta. Om Rabbi Yehuda Emasai. Under what circumstances is a mother allowed to help her child walk with this medadadim? Bizman shehu notel achas umeniach achas. In other words, he's old enough to put one foot down and then the other foot down. But if he's not able to put one foot down and another foot down, then probably what's going to happen is his mother's going to inadvertently lift him up, and in Rishus HaRabim, if she carries the baby, the infant, for Amos, it's going to be a violation of Havaras Dalet Amos Rishus HaRabim. Gemara says, Om Rabbi Yudom Arab. There's a very dangerous situation for an animal that fell into a stream of water and cannot get out of the stream. But we have here an overarching rule called Tsar Bali Chaim. So what is he allowed to do? Rabbi Yehuda, in the name of Rav, says, Mevi korim uksosos umeniach tachteha. Right, so he has pillows and cushions. These are not mukta items. And he's allowed to place it underneath the animal. And hopefully the animal will jump on to the pillows and cushions and be able to use that as a step in order to get out of this stream of water. Also, and hopefully she'll emerge. But keep in mind that Rabbi Yehuda Marav is not going to allow you to lift up the animal and physically save it from the stream of water. Meisve, the Gemara Sakasha from a Braisa, Behema shenafla li'amas mayim, if an animal fell into a stream of water, Ose lo parnosa bimkoma, you're not allowed to take cushions and pillows in order to facilitate the animals jumping out of the, climbing out of the stream. The best thing you could do is to give the animal all its food, all its provisions, bishvil shelo tamus, so it won't die of hunger, and hopefully after Shabbos, you'll be able to still save the animal and haul it out of the water. Parnosa in, you're only allowed, the Braisa says, to feed the animal, but korim uksosos lo. We never allowed you to pillow, to cushion the animal by bringing pillows and cushions into the stream and giving it a way of climbing out. And this Braisa, therefore, is a kasha on Rav. Lo kasha, the Gemara says. Hodi efshar lebefarnasa, if you can save the animal by feeding it, then that's what you have to do. And you're going to alleviate the animal's suffering by providing the animal with provisions to eat, and the animal will not die of starvation, then fine. That's what you have to do. We're not going to allow you to, even indirectly by bringing pillows, get the animal to jump out of the pool. But hadi ef sholofarnos, in a case where it's impossible to feed the animal is suffering tremendously and dying of hunger, then in such a case, we're going to allow you to bring the cushions and the pillows in order to facilitate the animal getting out of the stream. So, efshar b'parnosa ein, if there is a possibility of surviving, of bringing food to guarantee the animal will be alleviated, then that's what you have to do. Low, but eino chinami, in a fallback position where it's impossible to survive, to provide the animal with enough food, then maybe karam uksasim and yach tachtei, even the braisa would agree that you're allowed to bring pillows. So the Gemara asks, v'hoka mevatel kli meichano, we're not allowed to take something that's not mukta and make it into mukta. Now, what you do is, by bringing the pillows and cushioning the animal, you now have made that pillow into what's called a basis lemukta, and therefore you've converted a non-mukta object into mukta. So the Gemara answers, Savar Rav holds, Mevato kli meichanu derabona. The iser of making a kli into mukta is only rabbinic, and Tsar Bali Chaim doraisa, the Torah requires us, and that's the whole parasha Priku Teina, that we have to worry about the suffering of the animal. Osi doraisa v'dochi drabonon. The biblical mitzvah of Tsar Bali Chaim overrides the isur drabonon of mevatel kli meichanu. Tarnagola shebarcha, if a hen escaped, we can push her from the back. Dochin in, we're only allowed to push her, but medadadin lo, in the case of a hen, we're not allowed to grab it on the two sides in order to help it walk. Why not? Tnina loha de Torah Rabbanon, this is reflected in the Braisa, medadadin behema chayavi of bechotzav lo es hatarnagolas, that although this medadadin is mutter in other animals, but not in the case of a hen. Why not? Tanagol is my time alone. Omar Abaye, Mishum de Makafya Nafsha. A hen, once you grab it on both sides, will lift herself up from the ground. And basically, now you're carrying this hen. And a hen is mukta on Shabbos. Tony Chadi, we have one braisa that says, Midadadin Behema V'chaya V'of Bechotzer. You're not allowed to aid this animal in a public domain to help it walk. You can only do that in a private domain, which is called a chotzer. V'aisha, but in the case of a woman, medadados benaber shusarabim, she's allowed to help her infant walk, even in a public domain. V'ein tzach lom v'chotzer, goes without saying that she's allowed to do this in a private domain. V'tanya idach, but another brisa says, ein okrim behema v'chayv ha'of b'chotzer. Avol dochim b'hem she'ikonsu. It means that whereas the first brisa, at least in the case of a chotzer, allowed you to do what's called medadadin with regard to animals, the exception of which is a hen, and that was allowed in a chotzer. This second brisa says you're not allowed to do this even in a chotzer, even in a private yard. All you're allowed to do is to push it from the outside, from the back. So Gemara says, wait a minute, ha gufa kasha, you're asking me a kasha from the second brisa. The brisa itself seems to contradict itself. There's an inner contradiction in the brisa. Why? Amrit ein okrin. The brisa says that you're not allowed to lift the animal off the ground. Avol daduye medadinon. But it seems that if you want to help it walk by holding its body, that you're allowed to do. But hadar amrit, then in the safe of the same brisa, it says dochi v'ein medadin. You're only allowed to push it from behind. You're not allowed to hold it so that it walks. Om rabbi seifa son litarnagolas. When the brisa only allows you to push it from behind, but not to help it walk, that's called medadin. It was referring to the tarnagolas, where the fear was that the tarnagolas would lift its feet up off the ground, and you would violate the isur muktzah. But as far as other animals are concerned, we're not afraid that they would lift up their feet, and therefore you're not violating any sumukta. You're just making an effort to help the animal get back into its home. And for the sake of Tzar Bali Chaim, we're going to allow you to do that on Shabbos. Omar Abaye, Haiman de Shochet Tarnagola. Okay, this last piece of Gemara has to do with the laws of Shechita. Has really nothing whatsoever to do with our sugya and Shabbos. Haiman de Shochet Tarnagolas, if he's slaughtering a rooster, lichbeshinu lekare biara, you should make sure that it won't lift itself up off the ground. And how do you guarantee that? You press its legs into the ground. Inami nedole medol, because what we're afraid of is that it might lift itself up if you don't ground it. Didilma manachle liturfe biara. What's going to happen is the animal might plant its claws into the ground in order to pull away from the slaughterer. The akalele simone. And what's going to happen as a result of its very sharp, jerky movement of planting its claws in the ground, the simone, which means the veshet and the kona, the windpipe and the esophagus, might move out of place. That's called one of the five psule shchita, and that, I think it's called ikur. Anyway, now we start a brand new sugya. And this is the second Mishnah here on page Kufchav Chesamid Beis. This is going to be a major sugya. And this has to do with violating the Shabbos for the sake of a woman who is in labor or has in the process of giving birth or is after birth. Different categories and different isurim. First, the Mishnah wants to know about an animal. And an animal on Yontif is not muktzah because there's a het shechita on Yontif. But let's say the animal is about to give birth. Are you allowed to assist by pulling the fetus out of the animal's womb? And the Mishnah says that's osur. Ein miyaldin es habehema biyontif. That's already considered a very serious tircha. You know, you're really getting involved in a tircha, and that's not permitted. However, Ava, what you're allowed to do is misa'adin. Misa'adin is miloshon sa'ad. Sa'ad means to help, si'ua. So you're allowed to help the mother animal during the birth process, and the Gemara is going to go through different ways in which you could help the animal give birth, but you're not allowed to pull the animal out of the womb of its mother. Umiyaldin es ha'isha b'shabbos. But whatever is necessary to do to help a woman, a human mother, give birth, is allowed, and therefore Korin la chachoma mi makom lemakom. Chachoma is a woman who helps a pregnant woman give birth. Okay, we call it a doula, I think, or a midwife, and she can travel on Shabbos. We can call her to come from one place to another place. Umechalones a Shabbos, and we could violate the Shabbos in order to help this pregnant woman give birth. Umechalones a Shabbos. But koshrenes a tibur, now we're talking about helping the fetus, and we're allowed to tie the umbilical cord, and the reason for that is to prevent the fetus, because chas shalom, the umbilical cord could get tied around the neck of the baby, which is very, very dangerous. And Rabbi Yossi goes a step further. We're also allowed to cut the umbilical cord. And that, in Rabbi Yossi's frame of reference, that's also a sakana if you don't cut the umbilical cord. And then as far as what's necessary for circumcision, that too will override the Shabbos. Ketzad misadin, how do we assist the animal in giving birth? And what's allowed on Shabbos? Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Ochez es havlad. Right, you're allowed to hold on to the fetus as it's coming out of its mother's womb, in order that it should not fall on the ground. Kidei shelo yipol la'aretz. Rav Nachman Omar, dochek, he's going to allow you to go even a step further. Dochek bebosor kidei sheyetze avlad, to help the mother give birth, you can press in the flesh on the different sides of her body, of her womb, and kidei sheyetze avlad, so that the fetus will emerge. Tanya kavosi de Rabbi Yehuda. We have a brisa to support Rabbi Yehuda. Ketzad misadin, how do we help the animal give birth on Shabbos? Or actually, it's on Yontif, because he's allowed to do this on Yontif. There's no mukta on for animals. Ochsin es avlad shlo yipol aretz, right, that we saw before. V'nosein lo dar lesoch piv kidei sheyinok. Dad, I'm sorry. Once the animal gives birth, well, I think I skipped something. He says, "Ochas esvad shol yipol la'aretz v'nofeach lo bechotmo." He's allowed to actually blow into its nostrils, because his mucus in the nostrils, that could be very dangerous for the vlad. And he's allowed to put the dad, right, the udder, into the mouth, so that the baby should begin to suckle. Omar Rav Shimon ben Gamliel, Marachmim hayinu al behema tahor biyontif. All right, this is going to be a whole sugya, but for some reason, we would try to endear the animal, if it's a kosher species, for its mother. The Gemara is going to tell us that in kosher species, very often, the mother animal is somewhat cruel to its newborn, and therefore we have to do whatever we can to reestablish a compassionate relationship between the mother and the vlad. How do we do so? Hechi Ovid. So Gemara has a few different possible etzos. Number one is mevi bul shel melach umeniach lo betocha rechem kidei shetizkar tzara uterachem olav. We actually cause the mother to remember the pain of childbirth, and somehow that endears the offspring onto the mother. In other words, she realizes that, you know, she went through such labor pains, and now she has to have pity on her newborn. So they took this lump of salt, and they actually put it on top of the mother's womb, and she would remember the tsar. Another possibility is mezalfin mei shilya al gabi avlad. We take the water of the afterbirth, and we right on the placenta, and we take that liquid stuff, and we wipe it on the newborn, kadesh tariach, it has a certain kind of odor, recho utarachem olav. Again, somehow this scent of the mother is going to have the impact of having a compassion on the vlad. Vidafka tahora. This only applies to a kosher species. I will tmei lo, my time. Why not a kosher species? Tmei lo merachika vlada. Normally, a non-kosher species of animals does not reject its offspring, and you don't have to bring it to a state of compassion. Ve'iba merachika vlada, and in a case where the non-kosher mother rejects the vlad, lo makarva, nothing that will do is going to help, because that's an abnormal situation. Mialdin es ha'isha, we deliver a woman a human woman, and we tell the midwife to come on Shabbos and desecrate the Shabbos, michtei tanale miyaldin es ha'isha, we have now an indication that you're allowed to deliver a woman on Shabbos, and korin lo chacham makom, so we could summon the midwife to come, even if it violates the Shabbos halachas of Shabbos. And the Gemara says that why did the Mishnah have to go ahead and add this machalin aless Shabbos? I mean, you've already told me that korin lo chacham makom makom. Apparently, this overarching statement of machalin aless Shabbos is coming to include something. Lasuyeh hadit tana rabbanan. It's coming to include this statement in the Braisa that says im hoisa tzrichad l'ner, if the mother needs light, so we're allowed to light a candle for her. And chaverta madlekas la es haner, any of her friends are allowed to light the candle for her on Shabbos. V'yemalisa tzricha l'shemen, and she needs oil, and this is going to help her be more comfortable. And we're allowed to bring the oil from another rishus through a rishus aram. Chaverta mevil l'shemen biyad, if necessary, she'll carry the oil in her hands. V'yem eno safek biyad, if there's not enough oil that she can carry in the palm of her hands, that's not enough. Mevia bisara, she's allowed to use her hair and soak it with oil, and then she'll squeeze out the oil from her hair. And this is going to be a big sugya about whether you're allowed to squeeze oil from hair on Shabbos. Vieno sipek bisara, if that's not enough to get her all the oil that she needs, mevia la bikli, she's allowed to actually carry the oil in a utensil. Omar mar, im hoisa tzrichel iner, chaverta madlekes lo saner, she needs a light. Her friend is allowed to light this candle for her on Shabbos. Pshita, we said you could do anything that's necessary for this woman. Lo tzrichel besuma, she's blind. And you would think, ma'od detema kevin lo chaz, since she can't see, it's osur, she doesn't gain anything by lighting a lamp on Shabbos. Kamash will know, it calms her down. Why is it calm her down? Asyuve maisvei daito, that's yishuv adash, it puts her at ease, because savra, she thinks, if there's no light in the room, then she won't be able to get the service and the nursing that she needs. If she needs something, is chazia chavitav yovidle. But now her friends will see it in the light, and they'll bring her whatever she needs. Moisa tzricha l'shemen, tepeglei mishum schita, how is she allowed to squeeze the oil out of her hair? Isn't that a violation of alecha schita? And the Gemara says, no. That's not the normal way of schita. Rama, Rav Yosef, Tiamri Shavayu, Ein schita b'seir. Rav Ashi, Omar, afilu tema yesh schita b'seir. I'll grant you that this is a violation of schita when you squeeze the hair and get out the oil. But, you know what? Mevia la b'kli derech sara. She brings it in a container by means of her hair. The comedy efshel shnuye mishaninon. That when she brings it in a container through her hair, that's already an unusual way. It's a kelacha yad, and that we're allowed to do on behalf of a woman who's giving birth. So we'll make a note of where we got up to here. We're on the bottom of Kuf Chav Ches Amid Beis, and we're up to Omar Av Yehuda, Omar Shmuel, and B'li Neder tomorrow we'll try to give a little bit of an overview of some of the categories of a woman who's in the process of giving birth, before she gives birth, when she's ready to give birth, and after she gives birth. That'll be, Amir Tzashem, our subject for tomorrow. What are you allowed to do on behalf of a woman who's giving birth on Shabbos? Everyone should have a wonderful day.